You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. I'm so happy to welcome the Santa Fe Opera as a sponsor of the Radio Cafe. The Santa Fe Opera is in its 62nd season, and this summer will present 5 operas in 37 performances, starting on opening night, June 29th, and running through August 25th. After a sunset tailgate or dinner in the cantina, you can enjoy a night of opera under the Santa Fe skies with masterworks by American icons and European legends. To learn more about the upcoming shows, visit santafeopera.org, where you can purchase tickets as well. That's santafeopera.org. This program is brought to you by Total Wine and More. With locations in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, each store has about 8,000 different wines from all over the world, and thousands of beers, including both major brands and microbrews and imported beers. And they have more than 3,000 different kinds of spirits, all at the lowest prices you'll find, and with a trained, knowledgeable staff. They're on the web at totalwine.com, and you can order for in-store pickup. And if you use my promo code, you can save even more. Use code 6979 at the store or online and receive $10 off on your next $50 purchase. That's code 6979. Thanks again to Total Wine and More for sponsoring the Radio Cafe. And by the way, if you want to sponsor the Radio Cafe, you can contact Henry Lopez. His email is hlopez@sfnewmexican.com. You can also call 505-986-3054. Or you can go to radiocafe.org and click on New Mexican and find all that information there. And now to our program. What you're listening to is the cries of children whose parents have been taken away from them on the U.S.-Mexico border. The audio was recorded by an anonymous person and released by ProPublica. You can find the audio and a very good article at ProPublica.org. And as people across the nation are horrified by the fact that official U.S. policy has been to directly cause the suffering of children like these and thousands more, I thought this would be an important time to talk to professionals in child development about what the short and long-term consequences can be for families, especially children, who are separated from each other in this way. Since I recorded the program with the two guests you're about to hear, the president has signed an executive order rescinding the policy to separate migrant parents from their children. But the new order does nothing to address the thousands of parents and children who have already been separated. Joining us today is Sherry Alderman. She's a developmental behavioral pediatrician and president of the Oregon Infant Mental Health Association. Also joining us is David Atencio. He's associate professor of family and child studies at the University of New Mexico College of Education. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
So what are the consequences for young children whose parents are taken away from them?
Well, that's a very important issue that plays into this and cannot be overstated. The American Academy of Pediatrics has come out strongly opposed to this because we know that the stress that a young child or any child, but especially a young child with that developing brain, endures in the process of making that trip and then crossing over, that is buffered by being in the presence of their caregiver or their parent. And when you strip that parent away and move that child, that infant, that toddler, that young child into a strange environment without the security of that caregiver, it is devastating for brain development. It's highly toxic and can result in future adversity.
What are some of those adverse consequences that children can experience when deprived of their relationship with their parents?
Well, we know that this kind of emotional neglect, emotional abuse, we know that there are particular consequences. There is an immediate disruption in the neurodevelopment of the child, which can then evolve into social, emotional, and intellectual impairments, and left unchecked can be the basis for more susceptibility to disease and social problems and mental health issues and even early death.
Sherry Alderman, what happens to the actual brains of babies and toddlers who are traumatized in this way?
When the brain is developing, it's very responsive to environment, exquisitely responsive to environment. And when that child is feeling intense stress, as expressed through inconsolable crying, as expressed through withdrawal, that lays down neural pathways that program that infant or that baby to not feel safe in the world. And if they're not feeling safe in the world, they're not going to be liberated to explore the world and learn. They're not going to be trusting of other adults to engage in new relationships that can be a learning experience for them. And they will carry on, if not repaired, into adulthood with a pattern of social disengagement or other adverse antisocial behaviors. So this child is impacted physically, impacted mentally, impacted at a endocrine level, and could potentially have impaired cognition and capacity for learning and excelling in academic settings and onward into adulthood without repair.
How is all of this exacerbated when the people who we're talking about are asylum seekers? They're already coming from trauma, from gang warfare or domestic violence or war or other kinds of situations like that. They're already starting with an insecure base. How does that make it worse for the children?
Toxic stress is cumulative. So we already have a situation where that child has been in an environment that is potentially toxic. What we had previous to entering the United States and being separated from that parent is they had the parent as a buffer to that toxic stress. You know, we have tolerable stress because we have relationships that buffer us from the full impact of that stress. But when that relationship is stripped away, then it becomes toxic stress. So that family unit has come from a toxic environment, has already endured some stress because of the environment that they are coming from. And now we as a society right now are layering onto that stress the additional stress of being separated from that caring adult and further impacting the adverse early childhood outcomes.
I think part of what's so painful and shocking about all of this is that these policies are so purposefully cruel and they fly in the face of our most basic humanity.
Yes. We know that when we come into this world, we are endowed with three fundamental psychological needs that all humans have. And these are needs that need to be satisfied throughout the life course, and especially in the early years of our lives. And that is, we have a need for mastery or for competence. We have evolved to want to be competent. We also have a fundamental psychological need for autonomy. We want to be independent. But equally important is we have a fundamental need of relatedness. Our development is very much relational based. We as human beings want to be connected socially with other people. And as you've heard in the news, one of the consequences of implementing this new policy at the borders is that the ICE officers are not allowed to have physical contact with the children. And this is particularly troubling for developmental scientists because we know that children need to be soothed, they need to be held, they need to be comforted in order for caregivers, parents, teachers, and other people that care for young children to function as a way to help attenuate the natural evolutionary response to stress, which happens at the chemical level within our bodies. And left unchecked, it wreaks havoc on future development. Our brain functionality, our brain architecture, the way that our brain is wired, it depends on the chemistry of the brain and how our body reacts by releasing stress hormones. The unfortunate consequence of these stress hormones is that they impede, they stop development from occurring. So you take into account how many hours and days and weeks and months these children are going to be held in captivity, isolated from any kind of physical contact, isolated from their loved ones who they have formed attachment bonds with. And you begin to see just how profound this tragedy is for these young children.
Sherry, what's your take on this policy of not touching the children?
Well, the American Academy of Pediatrics has called this child abuse. When a child is enduring child abuse, they will cry out for that relationship with their caregiver that they had grown to depend upon. They cry out. They are in their best way demanding that that parent or caregiver come and hold them for protection and a sense of safety. And when that is pulled away and the child does not get the comfort that they need from a caring adult, they will withdraw, and that withdrawal, that detachment from social interaction is one of the most devastating outcomes and one of the most challenging outcomes to repair.
You're listening to the Radio Cafe. We're going to take just a quick break to hear from one of our beloved sponsors. The Radio Cafe is brought to you today by the City of Santa Fe Water Conservation. After a warm winter with lots of beautiful blue skies but very little moisture, the city is calling on its residents to renew our water conservation efforts. Visit facebook.com/savewatersantafe to take the new online water quiz and learn how to save water and contribute long-term to keeping Santa Fe green and healthy. You'll also find out how to earn hundreds and even thousands of dollars by making your home and workplace more water-wise. That's facebook.com/savewatersantafe. And thanks to the City of Santa Fe Water Conservation for sponsoring the Radio Cafe. And now back to our program. It seems so obvious that the best thing that one can do is prevention. In other words, don't get kids into that situation in the first place where they are traumatized by separation from their parents. But that's what we have now, and the kids are numbering in the thousands. What kind of healing is possible under those circumstances? Are there treatments that can help people who are damaged in this way in the short term and in the long run, some years down the line?
Yeah, there are. There are ways of repair. Of course, repair is much more costly in terms of time and human resources than prevention in the first place. But take incarcerated parents in our country, and our executive branch is telling us that these parents are criminals and therefore are being separated from their children and incarcerated. We have incarcerated parents in our prison system right now, and those parents have access to their children. And they have access to their children because we know from lots of research that secure attachment is so vitally important for brain development, especially in early childhood, that we allow children to have contact with their parents even when those parents are incarcerated. And a project that I have led, Nurturing Healthy Attachment, is an intervention that goes into the women's prison and provides those mothers with interventions and skills that will cut through the shame that they have experienced and allow them to be more emotionally engaged and available with their child, and allows the child to experience secure attachment even when their parent is incarcerated. And in some prisons, we even have babies who live with their incarcerated mom. So just because, even if one were to believe that these people are criminals, that is still not a good excuse for separating these adults from their children.
And the definition of criminal is kind of stretched, I think, when you think about the fact that there are really people who are seeking asylum and who are actually seeking to escape from a criminality, whether it be gang violence or whatever, and to get their children to safety. So defining that as criminality, it's a stretch for me. It's a stretch for, I think, a lot of people.
Definitely so. In fact, the United Nations Human Rights Council has called this practice unconscionable because it is outrageous. There are lots of holes in this practice that our executive branch has turned their back on.
And I have to say, when we talk about our prison system, there are a lot of problems. And this practice of isolating children makes me think about all the people who are routinely placed in solitary confinement. Yeah, they have food and shelter, but they don't have that kind of human connection with other people that is essential for adults and is absolutely necessary. It's a requirement for children.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And there is a psychology of incarceration. There is a psychology that is in a lot of ways antithetical to a psychology of early childhood development. We know from many, many decades ago, the research of Professor Harry Harlow, which focused specifically on maternal separation, dependency of needs, and social isolation of young rhesus monkeys. We know that isolating very young rhesus monkeys produce psychopathology, the developmental trajectory of their intellectual, social, emotional systems is changed fundamentally when they are neglected or prevented from the continuous support, warmth, and security and structure that's afforded through the parental care of the young children. But we're talking about humans now in cages, and there was some, you know, one of my professors at Stanford, Albert Bandura, one of the fathers of theory of aggression, he's talked about this concept of mechanisms of moral transgression, how we, though we may think of ourselves as being a moral person, we can justify our violent and aggressive behavior towards others. And it's classic of what's happening in Washington, D.C. I mean, there was a person who actually, the media is reporting that these kids are in cages. And some politicians said, well, they're not cages. They're more like pens. They're like pens. You know, so, okay, so they're not cages like animals in the zoo. They're more like our farm animals. You know, it's still, it's, you know, they're trying to rationalize by what Bandura would call euphemistic labeling. You know, we give a nice, sterile term to justify the aggressive and violent behavior. Or what some of the politicians, they're basically blaming the victim. Well, they came into the country illegally and they need to be treated as criminals, or justifying separating the children because that's what happens when a parent goes to jail. Actually, that's not what happens. So, yeah, there's a lot of interesting things happening in how we are transgressing from our sense of morality and ethics of how we treat people in this country to justify this new policy. And that's also a real tragedy in and of itself.
David Atencio, what is your perspective on the healing process? Let's say parents and children are reunited. There's still a lot of post-traumatic stress. What needs to happen for real healing to take place?
Well, I think that it's very widely accepted that the earlier intervention occurs, the more attuned and specific that intervention is for the needs of the child specifically and the family in general, the greater the likelihood of a positive developmental outcome will be. So what specifically is needed, I think, first of all, is that these children need to be rejoined with their parents. The family needs to be treated in an ethical manner. I think that these families need fundamentally to be able to return to a certain level of normalcy and also to a situation where their basic needs are being met, a sense of security, shelter. But I think for the young children in particular, I think the most important element is that they are able to be cared for and be kept in close proximity with their parents. Here in the Albuquerque area, for example, I think Albuquerque Public Schools reports that on any given day, there are 3,000 to 4,000 children that are homeless. But fortunately, though they are faced with many, many different challenges, fortunately for them, for most of the children, they are homeless with their parents, with parental care. And the very risky situation of being homeless is attenuated in a lot of ways for the children because of that support, that buffer that parents provide. I'm not saying that being homeless is not a challenging situation for the child and the family, but it's helped by the fact that the parents are there. And so I think in a lot of ways, the same situation is going to unfold here once these children are able to get back together with their parents. Now, for some of these families, I imagine that they will be deported, but they will be deported hopefully as a whole family.
What you're talking about is returning to normalcy, reuniting children with their parents, reuniting families. Is that enough? Are there psychological therapies or interventions or other things along those lines that would be helpful or necessary to these traumatized parents and children?
Oh, absolutely. There are many intervention programs and family support programs in this country. Home visiting programs, early intervention programs. Our Head Start system is designed not only to support the health and well-being of young children, but also the families. And so there are many parent education programs and family intervention initiatives that recognize how important it is for the family system to be healthy in order for the child to be healthy. So is there going to be a need for these kinds of interventions? Absolutely. As these children mature and the family transitions and moves on, there is going to be a need for these children and these families to be in some kind of program that provides social support for the family to become strong and to become psychologically sound and to be able to get these children ready for learning and ready for school so that they can enter the educational system and succeed.
One thing I've heard many times during the course of this crisis, politicians and editorial writers and many other people are saying, this is not who we are. And yet, if you look at the history of our country, particularly the treatment of Native people and the history of slavery, it's very much who we are.
Well, I would agree with you with that. I would like to think, though, that we ought to have evolved as a society, and especially with what we now know about early human development. But you're correct. I mean, this is not the first time that we have treated people horribly in many, many different ways. And really, tragedies that have occurred at the border, the wars that have been fought, and the colonizations that have occurred here in the Southwest, absolutely. But today, in 2018, this should not be happening. And, you know, the Center for Disease Control defines child abuse and neglect in very, very specific terms that I think are very clear that this is not something that our country should be involved with as a means of securing our borders.
Sherry Alderman, how has the medical community responded? The community of doctors and psychologists and therapists and caregivers and all the different people involved with child well-being, how have they responded to this crisis?
They're responding very appropriately opposed to this practice. There are lots of letters that people can sign on to calling for immediate discontinuation of separating parents from their children. It's at every point there is a unified stance that this needs to stop immediately and not be a part of negotiations.
If you could wave a magic wand and change what's going on at the border, what would you do? What would you change?
We need to keep families together. and we need to treat them with the respect that they are due. And we should have compassion as a society for the world that they are trying to escape for the well-being of their children. And we need to have appropriate resources to support those families.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I just appreciate the opportunity to lay out how important this issue is and how devastating it is for young children, especially when they're separated from their parents, and how this has reached an international level of attention because it is so incredibly unacceptable, and that every person should really be voicing their opposition to this practice and finding ways of communicating with their senators and representatives that this should not be a negotiation item and that it should discontinue immediately.
Sherry Alderman is a developmental behavioral pediatrician. She's president of the Oregon Infant Mental Health Association. And David Atencio is associate professor of family and child studies at UNM College of Education. Thank you both so much for being with us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.